Okay, so in this lunch talk, I'll try to review and remind people about the radial physics, or what I know about it, at least. So I'll just first introduce the radian, then talk about the radian in the so-called RS1 model, where all the matter is put on a TV brain in this warped extra dimension. Then I'll move forward in time and discuss new results from Cornell people on radian physics when the matter is in the bulk of the 5D warped extra dimension. Then I'll move back in time again and discuss this Higgs radian mixing issue and give some plots I managed to do over the weekend, in which combining radian in the bulk, I mean matter in the bulk, with Higgs radian mixing. Okay. Okay, so presumably what is expected is that both Higgs and the radian might be kind of easily found at the LHC. So when you look at a scalar, you look at a bump in the gamma-gamma signal, you wonder, well, is it the Higgs or is it something else? And the something else in these models of warped extra dimensions, the radian happens to have very Higgs-like, very similar couplings to matter, except for gluons and photons, where you have some extra contribution. But you might get kind of very similar signals from the radian. Now, in this model, the radian, when you first set up the scenario, the radian is massless, and one needs to stabilize the extra dimension, which will give a mass to the radian. But it is expected, or at least if you work in the limit of that the stabilization mechanism does not back react too much on your metric background, then the radian mass is expected to be small. It's expected to be proportional to the amount of back reaction on the Randall-Syndrome metric background. Now, if you put fermions and gauge fields in the bulk, in order to address flavor-changing neutral current problems, so that you kind of geographically localize fermions away from the brain where the Higgs lives and other fermions, if you do that, precision constraints give you very strong constraints on the mass of the lightest KK modes, which is roughly 2 to 3 TeV, something like that. But the radian is still around, so you might expect to still see the radian, even if it's very hard to see these very heavy resonances. And then the radian, as in principle, can just mix with the Higgs. It's just a scalar particle, neutral. So it's interesting to see how can one disentangle these two. So as a disclaimer, I just put some papers. I mean, I haven't had time to do a good job on referencing, so I just put some papers I have looked at and used this past week, and perhaps put them in the next slide. Okay, so what is the radian? So then the setup is a 5D model, a warped extra dimension, in which the metric has this warp factor. And one sets the distance of the brain such that there is a warp down scale at between one brain and the other brain. So graviton is localized at the so-called Planck brain or V brain, and the matter fields, at least in the older Randall-Syndrome model, are localized on the TV brain, located at pi or not. So the scales kind of go warp down, and you try to address in this way the hierarchy problem of scales. Now, how do you introduce the radian? Well, the radian is part of the 5D graviton, so it's a metric perturbation. So you can just start and add a perturbation to this Randall-Syndrome metric, and then you have some gauge freedom. You have a 5D diffeomorphism invariance, and you start gauging away degrees of freedom. So, for example, you can gauge away the mu 5 part of the graviton, and then you try to gauge away the 5 component of the metric, and you just can't because of the boundary conditions. The most you can do is to gauge away kind of the dependence on the extra dimension, on the 5-5 component, but you still can get a 4D scalar field, which we call the radian. In the mu nu part of the tensor of the graviton perturbation, one can show that this tensor, this 5D tensor mode, can be put in a transverse traceless gauge and extract a constant, I mean a scalar perturbation, which is the radian from it. And in this way, if you put these metric perturbations, what you end up finding in the pure gravity Lagrangian is the coupled terms from these tensor perturbations and the radian. So we just don't get any kinetic mixing between them. So this is how you can define the radian. From this, there's going to be a tower of KK modes for these gravitons. One is going to be massless, and then you have your tower of modes. And with this metric, what you can get is the couplings of the radian to matter fields, of one radian to matter fields. But you cannot get, say, two radians with vector fields, for example. And at some point later on, I will need this coupling. So I will just mention how to attack this.
You can't get it because you linearize the metric.
Because you...
Because it doesn't exist.
No, right. Yes. So it's just... I'm just using... You can get them, but I'll just mention how to get them. And this is just a linearized version of the metric, but you can still try to get quadratic interactions out of this metric.
Manuel, a very elementary question. What forces the radian to be a scalar?
Well, I mean, it's just so you have here a component in the metric, which is just a scalar, the 5-5 component of the metric. And so that's what at the end of the day will end up being the radian. So it's just a scalar. There's vector modes, the mu 5 terms of the metric, which has a mu index. These guys you can gauge them away. You can treat them as pure gauges, and so you don't consider them. But you still have this physical degree of freedom, which is just a scalar. And I mean, you can think of it as just a 5-5 part of the metric. It becomes a scalar field. And it does not have dependence on the y coordinate, so it's just a 4D scalar field without tower.
You can think of it as a distance between the two grains.
The distance, you say?
Yeah.
Well, it's like you add a perturbation in the measure distance, so it's perturbing the distance between the two grains. So, it was at some point it was important for us to get this coupling because we were wondering about what is the consequence of loops of radian with W's and Z's. And so we were looking for this coupling, two radians. Yeah, I'll show you later, but I just mentioned it. So stuff like that. So if this is the radian, we would like to have this coupling to see what is the effect on the polarization, to kind of look at the oblique corrections. So what we find out was that there's a good gauge choice for the metric perturbations, quadratic in the radian, such that there are no tadpole terms, there are no R terms in the pure gravity Lagrangian. And well, actually, such that also this traceless transverse condition remains true up to quadratic terms in the radian. I don't know if you go into there, but at least there is a choice for this second order metric perturbation, such that it gives an easy way to find out these couplings, and that's the choice. So now at least we can formally try to think how to compute the interactions. We have a metric, and we just need to find out how it interacts with matter. So we just write the metric perturbatively in the radian. So let's forget about gravitons. And one just writes down the matter Lagrangian, where matter is just minimally coupled to gravity. And just one needs to compute a Taylor expansion on this matter Lagrangian with respect to the graviton. And so to go to one radian interacting with matter, we just need to use this formula and evaluate it at the background. So for two radian, for two graviton interaction, we need to go to higher order, I mean higher powers in this Taylor expansion. So what one finds during that is, well, we have the zero order. That does not depend on the metric perturbations. So this is just the matter Lagrangian. Then the first order, and just including the radian, which in the 5D theory gets this form. So I believe it must agree with this recent paper and an old paper by Rizzo. And if one wants to find the second order interactions of the radian with matter, and the matter is in this energy momentum tensor here, one just need to go ahead and carefully compute this thing. So it's not that simple to get, but you just crank up and you look for it. Now this R here is the 5-5 component of the metric, but it is not. It has, when you go ahead and compute the kinetic terms of this field, it's not canonically normalized. So you go ahead and canonically normalize and call the radian field this phi, and it picks up just an energy scale lambda r, which is a warped down version of the Planck mass. So this mass Planck times a warp factor, which solves your hierarchy problem, you get a scale which is sort of order TeVs. So finally, if one is in Randall syndrome 1, where matter is on the brain, we just take into account that matter is on the TeV brain, so on one brain. We don't care about the T55 parts of the energy momentum tensor. We just get this interaction, this linear interaction with the radian, which it couples to the trace of the energy momentum tensor and with an energy scale of lambda r. So this gives Higgs-like couplings. It gives exactly the same coupling as the Higgs, except that lambda here, in the case of the Higgs, would be replaced by the Higgs vector by v. It also has an extra neat thing that, for example, if you compute this for massive vector field, you get that the trace depends on the mass of the fields. But then, if you keep the epsilon parameter from dimensional regularization, you get a term that is proportional to epsilon, which tells you that if you're going to compute loops, there's going to be poles of 1 over epsilon, which are going to cancel with this term, and you're going to get an extra contribution due to the trace, to the fact that we have a trace here. So this is like the trace anomaly. So the radian, when this term is zero, couples to gluons and photons, not just like the Higgs via loops, which it does too, but it also has an extra contribution due to the trace anomaly. So these are the couplings, radian to gluons, to photons. So in the gluons, this is the loop, the triangle decay of radon to gamma. So this is a loop of W's and heavy quarks at the top. And then you have the coefficient of the beta function of SU3, which is the trace anomaly. In the case of the photon, you have also the coefficients of the beta functions, and you also have the loop functions here. And then for massive bosons, it's proportional to the mass with this 1 over lambda factor, and fermions also proportional to the mass. So really very Higgs-like coupling, except for these terms. And it's suppressed Higgs-like coupling.
Does the form of the couplings depend on assuming that you have a light radian, or if you're stabilizing it as a big mass, do you get the same result?
Why? What would change? So, yeah, I'm computing this in the unstabilized radian case. If you stabilize the radian and you have a massive radian, what? I mean, here, of course, here there's by hand a mass term for the radian, for the decay. But so why would it change?
Well, I guess I'm thinking naively the radian looks like some sort of goldstone and Orbit scale invariants. Mm-hmm. But if it has a mass, it's no longer a gold ceiling, so. But you're saying the couplings don't depend on this?
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm just computing the couplings directly from, I mean, in a kind of.
I guess the difference is if it's stabilizing, it has a big mass, it probably mixes a lot with the other K components.
How might also do that? It's almost a deformed geometry.
Yes. Yeah, right.
It's one of his conditions that the mass is small, going back to that.
Okay, so I just flashed this plot, which So I don't exactly remember what was the scale lambda R Kingman used in this plot, but the main point of this plot is to show the production cross-section for the radion at the LHC, and is to show the difference between the gluon fusion channel and the WW production. So it's almost two orders of magnitude larger for gluon fusion at this whole range of masses. So the radion production is going to come mainly from gluons. So a branching function plot, so it's very, very similar to the Higgs. The only difference, main difference of the radion is that photons are suppressed and gluons are enhanced. Then you have BB bar and other quarks. At the W and Z threshold, you start to get a huge, I mean, the main branchings are W, Zs. In this case, you also have the Higgses. The radion can decay into two Higgses and TT bar, and then the gluon goes down. So it's very, very Higgs-like branching. So I took this plot from Giudici, Ratazzi, and Wells, in which the plot the ratio of significance in two channels, the two kind of golden channels of the radion, is radion, glu-glu to radion to gamma-gamma, and glu-glu to radion to ZZ, and then to four leptons, and they take the ratio between those channels in with the radion and with the Higgs of the same mass. And just to show that, assuming that the Higgs is going, one is going to do very well with the Higgs, how well is it going to do, one is going to do with the radion at the LHC, and for, you see that this one is kind of as well as with the Higgs, so one kind of, seems that one can do very well also with the radion field. Generally, one can take 2T, 5T, if one still wants to solve the hierarchy problem. This is perhaps just to 500 GeV is just too low for them. I mean, the effective theory kind of goes non-perturbative very quickly, I would say. Okay, so this is kind of the standard.
Can you remind me, how was lambda phi related to the mass of the
Lattice cake? The relation is that the Lattice cake mode has a dependence on the Planck mass. I mean, it's basically a warped down Planck mass. And this lambda phi is also a warped down Planck mass. So it turns out that there's just a factor of square root of 6 times some order 1.
It's almost the same, because there's a root 6 between r prime and...
Yes.
And actually there's 2.5 between one of the right and the
two are
almost the same.
Okay. Yeah, that's an order 1 factor.
You're looking at the curves that are 500 dB and less, right?
I'm sorry?
Sorry?
You shouldn't be looking at the curve at the
QPV on that side. Yeah, I mean, I would look at this curve. If lambda goes very, very large, then you start to get a hierarchy again because you don't warp down enough.
Why is the mass of this thing so small?
The mass of the radian?
Yeah.
Well, you don't know the mass of the radian. It depends on how you stabilize the setup. But you assume that at least if you want to work in the Randall syndrome basis, you assume that you're not back reacting too much on the Randall syndrome metric. If you do, I mean, I guess it's possible just to put a huge back reaction, get a completely weird warp factor, and get a large radial mass. I mean, I don't see why not. But then computationally, it's going to be hard. And I think you get a lot more constraints from precision electric, if I remember correctly. But I mean, I think there was a paper by Delgado and Falkowski, I think, looking at how things change when you change a lot the warp factor. But I mean, I'm assuming that there's no, I mean, you can still use the Randall syndrome background metric. And therefore, the radian mass has to be light. I mean, as soon as it gets very large, you know, you start to have to think that this is just, not good anymore.
At least in the most canonical example, it's going very wide, but it's small.
Well, although you can make it big. No, you can arrange it to have a large back reaction.
But then of course you don't need to be small. You calculate,
yeah, right. Then you just don't calculate, you cannot calculate many things because it just becomes a weird warp factor. Okay, so now I'll go to last year. So there's a nice paper by Cornell people in which they rethink about radium couplings when matter is in the bulk. The reason that now people are thinking about putting this matter in the bulk is because you can address also flavor problems by getting the correct Yukawa hierarchies because fermions are localized away. You can also suppress higher order operators, flavor changing neutral currents, dangerous operators. And so what does change when you put matter in the bulk? So the interaction of the radium to matter, I wrote it earlier on, it's this term, and has this T55 component. So the 5-5, there's going to be fields living in the bulk, so there's going to be a new extra contribution from this term. In particular, for the massless gauge fields, say photons and gluons, which there was no three-level interaction to the radium in the RS1 case. In this case, there's going to be a three-level interaction between radium and photons and radium and gluons. So for this massless gauge field, what these people consider was brain-localized kinetic terms for the gauge fields. So correct me if I'm wrong at some point. So brain-localized kinetic terms for the gauge fields, which will have an interesting effect. So you'll have new switches to turn on and off. So there's this bulk three-level term. You also have the trace anomaly, just like in the RS1 case. And you consider again the loop contributions, the triangle contributions. So the main result that they obtain, which with a careful analysis, it did not seem to be very simple, but they get a nice final formula, which looks like loop contributions, the beta functions, so which cannot be thought as the trace anomaly, the kinetic terms. So these are brain kinetic terms for gauge fields on the brains, which will have an effect on the coupling. And this one can think of it as the bulk interaction, although it's not as simple as that. But
can you explain what changed here to the previous coupling?
So this is basically the previous coupling. And this one and brain kinetic terms. So yeah, so now the 5D gluon lives in the bulk and has new interactions with gravity.
Is this anomalous coupling don't care about the fact that there is also carrying us in the bulk and stuff?
Well, so fermions.
So
in the trace anomaly, really the fermions on the TV brain are the ones you consider, but then from the gauge coupling and renormalization, I think you take back again the beta function coefficients from the fermions in the TV brain. And at the end of the day, you end up with this very simple looking result. Is that But at the end of the day, it comes out to this very neat formula, which, I mean, means something. I mean, I'm sure there's this. They commented on how to explain this through the ADS-CFT or just thinking about the radion as how the radius changes and looking for the couplings in this way. But it's a pretty simple formula after a kind of difficult computation, I guess. Okay, so the interaction with the other field. So I think the main numerical difference is this interaction with massless gauge field. The rest is, for example.
Another question before we continue. So, when we need this formula, what can we assume for the tau UV and tau IR?
Well, they compute the. Yes. So then the interactions with massive gauge bosons have new contributions, but the main component is still the mass coming from the mass, and there's, I think, some small new terms, but there's still the numerically it's just going to be coupled to the mass of the heavy bosons. The fermions, well, you're localizing fermions in different places, but at the end of the day, you still want to have the Higgs generating the fermion masses. So, I mean, the coupling of the radion to the fermions is still going to be proportional to the mass of the fermions, even though you can, it's model dependent and there might be some order one factors. But even if you put the fermions away, you're still putting them such that the Yukawa coupling becomes, I mean, you obtain the correct mass of them. So, I mean, it's not surprising that you still get an interaction with fermions proportional to the mass. And then you have the Higgs, you assume that the Higgs is still living on the brain, and so this doesn't change. So I took these plots. So these are the plots for branching fractions of the radion. In the cases of no brain kinetic terms of gauge bosons, some kinetic term in the SU, in the gluons, in the photons, and in both. So in this plot, for example, what you can see is that basically the dashes are the all RS model, and the thick lines are the new results. So in this case, one gets an enhancement of the gluon, of the gluon branching, and the suppression on the photon branching, simply because in the photon case, even though you had an extra bulk contribution, the beta functions were negative and they actually cancel out, and you get a worse result. So in this, at least in the light region, it's worse than. Interestingly, that this branching to photons, instead of going down as in the OLRS model, flattens down in all the cases. And this is like actually an interesting feature.
So the effects of these tells, the table doesn't say what the tells are, though. It says that they're negative.
Yeah, so this is just the perturbative limit. So this is one half of the value such that it becomes non-perturbative. Yes. So in this case, when you add this kinetic term for the gluons, what you end up doing is suppressing the gluons, and by suppressing the gluons, you enhance the branching of the photons, and you get some enhancement on the photon signal in this region. And again, you have a flat line. I think, is there something else?
So is there a sign associated with those terms too?
Well, so they decide to put only positive signs. Negative signs. Although that's not obvious. I'm not sure how obvious. Yeah, I agree with that. I'm not sure how obvious. You have to be careful, but. Yes, exactly. I think it's a conservative. Yeah, it's not obvious to me that you're going to get in for sure ghosts if they're exactly localized on the brain. But.
I have a question for this symmetric behavior. It seems that all these curves are very much parallel. Why is all the curves have pretty much the same mass
difference?
All pretty much linear in the mass?
In the radian mass?
Yeah. The mass.
The flat in the mass.
It doesn't depend on the mass.
But why they have all the same difference? But this one has the best thing. It's coupling to gate bosons in the high gate mass region is the cubic. It's fermions in linear. That's why gate bosons take over and the fermions come down in the Tanner model picture. Mm-hmm. Why they all have the same mass difference?
Well, the fermions does come down a little bit.
Maybe we can drop it far down. Yeah. Maybe up to T views and should see some features. It's much like
it's a log plot.
I don't have log. You can see the drop where it's enabling it to the W pair, DB pair versus top. That's why top channel comes down. The top pair is the power.
Touch still triggers the threshold here, so.
Well, no, that's not the pretty powerful threshold.
Yeah, so you from this plot, you see the equivalence of serum limit
already.
So HZ.
In the equivalent serum limit, top prop goes to nil.
Yeah, but HZ, the ratio between W and HZ is the ratio of power.
Thank you. keep using the CD, the subtle subject.
The top part is slowly dropping.
No.
That's not transparent.
Yes.
Not a big deal.
Yeah.
It's not part
enough. Yeah, perhaps. Yeah, because I'm really happy to stay in a kind of lower radiant mass, because if not, everything starts to get out of control. Okay, so they also compute these similar plots that I showed before from GDC, Ratatsky, and Wells. So this is the gamma-gamma significance with radian with respect to Higgs, and radian with respect to Higgs in the two channels, the gamma-gamma channel and four lepton channels. And the four leptons, you clearly do better with this radian with matter in the bulk, simply because you have this enhancement production to gluons, so you get to this consistent better significance. In the case of gamma gamma, it kind of changes depending on the mass of the radian due to this is with no kinetic terms, so you have an enhancement in glue in the glue channel production, but then you have some suppression in the photons. So you kind of so this is all RS model, and this is the matter in the bulk. So it goes like that. Here they did not. I mean, they do a sharp threshold for W's. So you can just imagine that this curve just goes smoothly. You consider Z to ZZ star. Radian to ZZ star. Okay. So I'll go back in time again and consider this possibility of mixing the radian with the Higgs. So this was, I think, introduced first in this paper, and then there was a very nice overall review of what all you can do with that. In this paper, then Madison group consider perturbative unitarity bounds on the mixing. Davis and Slack group, we consider phenomenology of this mixing. So what this mixing comes from putting a kinetic term on the brain, of gravity kinetic term on the brain, coupled to Higgs's, parametrized with this C term. Actually, and in this case, we won't be very conservative, and we will consider negative and positive values of Xi, which can be thought of as positive and negative kinetic terms for gravity in the brain. If the two Higgs picks up the valve, you get a kinetic term for gravity in the brain, and I don't see really.
Wasn't there a bound?
Yeah, there's a bound, so there's a limit in which. Well, and if you put C very, very large, you get a ghost. You get generically a ghost. But that's the bounds. You get a theoretical bound.
There's no mixing from the...
With the Higgs and radian? No. Well, there's...
The Higgs is not zero, right? So...
Well, there's just no Higgsing. I mean, there's no mixing. But you look.
Just like here, you also need the graph to get the mixing.
Well, yes, but you work it out, and the mixing just disappears. There's no. I mean, there should be in the TMU nu part. There should be a linear term in the radian, mm-hmm. And there's just no linear term in the radian. When you go to the bed, and you just don't have a one radian term. Yes, but in TMU nu.
It doesn't have a term squared h dagger h.
Well, yeah, but you have a quartic, and you break electroweak sector, and you don't find in the TMU nu. Yeah, you don't find a linear term. I mean, we looked at that. I mean, that's one of the first things you look for. Is there such a thing? So the simplest mixing that you can get is in this way, which is a kind of a nasty mixing. So this term gives a correction to the kinetic term of the radian. We put by hand a mass to the radian, assuming there's a Goldberger-Weiss-like thing that does not back react too much. And then there's a kinetic mixing between I mean, there's kinetic terms here, and whatever comes out of this at the quadratic level is this kinetic mixing. Then one needs to undo. So the way to undo it is, I mean, it's not just rotating fields. You need to redefine fields first, and then do a rotation. So you redefine fields, you get mass mixing, and then you rotate the mass matrix. And this is kind of a non-unitary thing, which is why it has lots of interesting effects. So I just took these slides. Don't go through it. The important thing is that then you redefine new fields, H and phi, and so you now have a two-scalar theory, and you call the new physical Higgs the field that in the limit of no mixing becomes the standard model Higgs. And you call the radiant field the field that in the no mixing limit becomes the gravi-scalar. And so you need to include these kind of angles. Well, they're not angles, they're kind of redefinitions, and look at what happens to the couplings with these new physical fields after. So there's a limit. So in this plot, what I show is so this is the C parameter that come from this kinetic mixing in the brain versus the radian mass with a fixed Higgs mass at 120 GeV. So one of the things that happen in this rotation business is that you cannot get a degenerate pair of scalars. The radian and the Higgs cannot be degenerate, which is why you get this hourglass shape. So 120 is forbidden. You get this is the ghost region. You basically start to get negative kinetic terms for either the radian or the Higgs. And there's an upper limit on the amount of mixing. So this just drops to zero. And it's for these values, I think lambda phi is 5 TeV. It's minus 3.2 and 3.2 roughly. You just cannot go higher than that. You just get ghosts. Okay. Actually, in this plot, these exclusions from left data is because the radian coupling, which are it's a light scalar in this case, get too large, and then lab 2 should have seen this 50 GeV or 60 GeV scalar coupling to Z's, and so you can actually have extract some exclusions from lab. Okay, so what I find interesting of this C mixing term is that the coupling, so these are Higgs couplings to Z and to fermions, they depend on this D plus gamma B term, which is just these angles to diagonalize the Lagrangian, and these are the radian and fermion couplings. Now, in the radian couplings, this term just happens to change sign for some parameter points. It goes from positive to negative. So for a point, it becomes zero. So there is a point in parameter space in which the radian does not couple to Z's and fermions. And it also happens with photons. The radian becomes phobic to photons for some point in parameter space, and also to gluons because of this mixing business. In the Higgs case, what we call the Higgs, there's no such thing happens, as I will show. So these are the couplings, the square of the couplings, Higgs to ZZ, which is also the coupling to fermions, and radian to ZZ. So in the Higgs case, one can get really huge enhancements of the couplings or suppressions, whereas in the radian case, one sees very clearly where the zeros, I mean that there are zeros in the couplings. For a heavy radian, this coupling kind of cancels close to zero. It's, I think, 0.2, I don't remember what was the value. For lighter radians, the zero moves, and for a very light radian, the zero moves. But so the radian coupling to matter starts to be non-standard because of this mixing issue. So I have to point out that lab bounds, so these are plots actually, these were my original plots, and we then put lab bounds. So for light radians, 20 and 55 dB, there's a limit, I think is for the black line is 0.01, and for the red line is, 0.001, 0.1, which means that the Higgs couplings, so you kind of limit, you say that C cannot be too negative or too positive, which means that the Higgs couplings, which looks like they just go crazy, start to be to become less crazy because of just left bounds. So the coupling of Z to this, sorry, of Higgs to this, is not changes. I mean, there's some changes, but not that much, as you may just think by looking at these. Okay, so ratio of branchings, glue to radian to gamma-gamma with respect to the standard model Higgs. One sees that one can get a huge difference just by moving around the C parameter, simply because there is a zero. So for some point, there's not going to be a coupling. So it can go from very large to very small. In this case, this is W fusion to radian to fermions. This is just basically again the same curve as the phi zz curve, because this ratio becomes just the coupling of the radian to both fermions and W. So it has zeros. So it's just the same one. And then for the four lepton channel, glue to radian to zz and two leptons. Well, you, in this case, just ZZ star, but you can just look for four leptons. You again see that that for heavy, for a heavy radian, you can get some big enhancement and get a similar rate as for the Higgs. And for very, very degenerate, so this is for 120 GeV Higgs, if you consider a radian very close in mass to that Higgs, you see that you don't have much room with the C parameter, simply because you don't allow, I mean, they should not be too degenerate, which means you cannot turn on the C parameter too much. So you have less play of tuning this C parameter mixing. Okay. If you don't fix the Higgs mass?
Yeah, I mean, in general, how will this radian Higgs mixing work by the dispersion of Higgs mass?
Well, you have to look at the couplings of the Higgs. Well, you look at left bounds, you look at this coupling, Higgs to ZZ, and the mixing the C parameter changes the coupling of the Higgs to bosons in this way. So for very light radian, you can enhance a lot this mixing, and then you would expect a lot more signal from Higgs. And for heavy radian, this thing goes down. Is that there's a kinematic. I mean, you cannot go. I mean, 120 GeV is LEP cannot give constraints on that. It did not reach that far. But you mean if you try to go lower in the Higgs mass, how can you do with LEP bounds? Are you thinking about that? From precision. So direct.
This thing contributes to double scattering, right?
Yes.
So, maybe what she's asking is, does it actually allow a heavier Higgs than usual?
Well, yeah. You can. I'm going to show. So, if it's indirect, I'm going to show plots on that. If that's what you mean, it contributes to WW scattering. This was this was studied in by Han, Krebs, and McElroy. And for large C, you just go non-perturbative very quickly. I looked at that at some point. In this case, you cannot go more than one or minus one in this with this parameter. Now for indirect, and I'll show that. So this is why I mentioned that I needed the couplings of the radian of two radians with massive bosons. One would like to see. I mean, of course, there's going to be lots of from this warp scenario. There's going to be lots of contributions to S and T. But the radian can also, it's like a Higgs, so you can also try to compute what is its effects on S and T parameters by looking at these loops. one needs to compute this term. There's anomalous couplings in the radian, so you need to take those into account. So we proceeded in doing that, and this was first computed by Chucky, Grazer, and Crit. So the procedure is you just subtract the reference Higgs contribution, you add the new Higgs contribution, the new radian contribution, and then anomalous contribution, and some kind of tree-level from contribution from higher-order operators. So you compute these things. And so this is a plot that is only in my PhD thesis because I did not put it anywhere. But in this case, you see how can you increase the Higgs mass? So you start here. So this line is for a Higgs mass of 120, 300, and 800. If you don't have any XE mixing and you increase the Higgs mass, you just start to get out of the ST ellipse. And so you start to be constrained by precision. But then now you turn on XE mixing. In this case, I took negative values, but in this case, it works just the same with positive values. So it's not an effect of the negative term. For these precise values, light radian and 5 TV, you start to get moving in this direction as you increase the tuning. So you can have
a high. What numbers are the values of this psi or theta? What are these numbers, 0, minus 1? It's the mixing, right?
These ones?
No. The values on the straight lines.
Oh, these are the XE values.
That was the question.
Yeah. So then this is a 800 GeV Higgs, and then if you put XE mixing of minus 2, you get back inside the ellipse.
That value can vary at what scale? At what scale for this mixing and for this Higgs mass, at what scale is the wind scattering?
Oh, good question. I think they were safe. I think.
What is the value that you have? What is the XE value?
So for
800 GeV and minus 2, for example. Yes, figure I remember. Yeah, sorry, I didn't have time to include that.
Starting from 700-800 GeV normal Higgs here, with this large value there as it moves down versus the radian can be around 2. The type of mass you're trying
to. But of course, so this is just the contribution of the radian loop. So you need to include also perhaps look at perturb when things go wrong, or if there's tree-level corrections from fermions in the bulk and whatever. So this is just the radian effects on these parameters.
So you're saying just take another scalar particle with some mixing into the Higgs.
With a kinetic mixing to the Higgs, because this is a non-unitary mixing, so it's not just. If you have this kind of very weird, you're just doing a non-orthogonal redefinition of fields. Well, you're redefining fields. Well, you do it in a unitary. So it's just not a rotation. You just extend things and then rotate. So it has these kind of nasty properties. Okay, so what we were looking for in this paper was basically constraints. So we did these collider searches in how can you put limits on the indirect limits on C, and by doing this computation, you see that in this plot that I showed earlier, you actually get a pretty nice constraint on C based on these loop corrections. So even though you have a theoretical right to get these large mixings, it looks like it's going to be indirectly starts to get constrained. Simply, you just get out of the ellipses in these regions. And it's kind of pretty independent on the value of C. So this parameter is just minus 1.5. So one can go ahead back quickly. So at these plots. And so anything, so you really have to forget if you believe this indirect, that there's not going to be other precision contributions in other directions. You just have to forget anything that is above 1.5. And minus 1.5 in the C mixing. So I think it was an interesting result. And all these, just to introduce, so I'm just now going to show some plots that I actually produced a month ago and over the weekend. So in this case, I'm going to use the new results from the Cornell people in the interaction of the radion and include this mixing. I did not do a full scan, but I think these plots are quite interesting. So on the left panel is going to be RS1 matter on the brain. On this panel is just the new stuff when matter is in the bug. So I first reproduced the plots from them in the case of bulk matter. So you have this gamma flattened, which is different from the case of the RS1 case, because it becomes flat because the bulk contribution to the new three-level contribution to the radion, to gamma coupling, does not depend on the radion mass. Okay, so now we turn on some mixing, very 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 conservative, a minus 0.1 in this case, and so I'll just first talk about the all RS model where matter is on the brain. The zero, so there's a zero coupling, so there's the coupling of radion to photons and fermions happen to have a zero roughly in the same place. So in this case, for this value, it happens here. So there's a big change, because now in this regime, the radion just doesn't like anymore to couple to both photons and BB bar, and only couples to gluons. This was one of the features we found out. Now in the new case, where you have new contributions to the coupling to photons, the zero, so when the radion becomes phobic to fermions, does not happen at the same point where it becomes phobic to the photons. And this is quite interesting, because now when you completely kill the branching to photon to fermions, you enhance the branching to photons, and you can get a lot more enhancement than before. And then you turn on. So do you see so here there's a line where there's nothing there. This is because I took a Higgs of 150 GeV, and as I said, there is some range of values that are disallowed. The radion and the Higgs cannot be degenerate. So this band is the ghost band here. Also, I did not include at 300, you should start to see radion to Higgses, but I just didn't have time to put it there. But so, you know, forget or think that there's going to be a Higgs, radion to Higgs branching coming out there. So the last plots, so this is the end. So this is now a positive Xi value, which changes the zeros of the couplings. In the all RS model, the zeros to both W, Zs, fermions, and photons happen roughly at the same point. There's also a zero in the glue also, but it's close to this ghost band. But so in this case, what happens is that because the gluon signal has a zero, the photon channel, I mean, in the light case, the photons could get an enhancement in the all RS model, and also fermions would enhance, and then the gluons would drop. And this is also one of the features we studied back in 2002. Now, in the new case, again, you have a separation between the zeros. So now the radion to gamma is zero at the light radions. But for heavy radions, you just have a zero for all Ws, Wzs, and fermions at a point, but at that point the gamma coupling is the same. And remember that the coupling here, unlike in the RS model, was kind of flattened. So you can just a huge bump in the signal to gamma. It's quite interesting. And then of course it's just going to go, you produce the radion through gluons, it decays into gluons and photons in this case, and you can get a high branching. And in an unexpected place, because you would expect here to start seeing signals from four leptons, and instead you might start to get a bump in the photon, in the diphoton mass, a bump for a very heavy thing, and it could mean that this is the radion and not the Higgs. And okay, so this is all preliminary. I checked everything, and it makes sense. So this is it. Okay, so to conclude, so the radion phenomenology is expected to be very similar to the Higgs. There's not much work to do, or hasn't been much work to do, because it was kind of simple and well studied. It turns out that there may be some interesting new things to do with when this matter is on the bulk. And in this case, after doing this plot, I think a thorough scan of parameter space should be done. And so, a final remark. One of the reasons I was looking at these things, I was discussing it with Kaustubagas in Maryland. And if you have very heavy inaccessible resonances, but you have very easy access to a radion, you might try to use the radion as a discovery channel for, say, a KK graviton or something like that, by just looking at the KK graviton 2-2 radion signal, which is actually from my point of view, is a pure gravity interaction that perhaps you could get a hold from this gamma signal or something like that. And well, that's it. So thanks for your time.
This mixing term that you wrote, which involves the induced curvature times h delta h, if you in a holographic theory, was it but is there any story that
I don't know, Matt or Chaba? Yes, but yeah, I'm not sure about what is the interpretation there. We should ask Kaustubh.
Because you can write it, I understand that it's also, you know, the writing dimension.
Yes. I mean, it can be thought of as the dilaton, but I'm not sure how to understand that. That is just. Yeah, I mean, somebody. For gravity.
Something about the CFT. What is the gauge?
Well, first of all, since there is no radio.
It's very sensible, actually. I'm just curious, I wanted to
understand
what was
non-standard.
You went very quickly.
Yeah, I mean, I took these slides very quickly too.
No. The art. Okay.
So you need to break down this kinetic mixing.
I'm sorry, where did you come from?
The kinetic mixing?
Yeah.
Well, so the radion is somewhere here.
Yes.
And the Higgs is here, so you're going to get one term.
Oh, there is a bulk supply in R somehow.
Yeah. Yes. And there's also contribution on the radion.
Yes.
I think this one is the one that will put you a limit on the size of Xi. That this thing should not be very large or go negative. And so how you solve it is you redefine fields first. This redefinition now couples in masses, and then you rotate the masses. And then that's. But the weird thing comes from the redefinition of fields. So you're kind of, it's not an orthogonal thing. You're just expanding the field. And so it has lots of. It can be very, very effective for non-perturbative. Or
same operator?
Yes, exactly same thing.
Same thing for the unitary bound. So that was one part of your question you were asking about the mass change. The other thing about this Lincoln quantity is that if this Lincoln quantity is larger than typically 2.7 or around 3 or so, then you can have the set in your case. So that even below your cutoff scale, you could evaluate the unitarity. It's basically an indication that being effective field theory, if you treat a such big mixing parameter such as a 3 or so, then that's very soon it's the effective field change that you would have to do. Two parameters, one mixing, another 2 data around 3. Otherwise, the Higgs mass, limited type, not too much limited type.
looks like this coefficient reminds me of one thing. But this the mixing project size should be unsafe. Is this a particular the conformal limit?
But it's conformal in four dimensions, not in five dimensions.
But this, to me, many years, that's also the evidence. We never understood how we noticed this, but I never really understood what was from a particular viewpoint or the other aspect, whether there's any particular significance or.
Yes, there's one sixth. But it, so it's the conformal xi for four dimensions. So I don't know if you think of this coming from kind of a localization in three dimension, then it's not really in 5D, it's a different value. But yeah, you get a one sixth does some special things in your formula. It simplifies the formula. But yeah, I'm not sure.
No particular reason, no particular meaning.
In this case, I don't know.
Nothing interesting happens to your branch in there, so coupling. In a way, your zero is.
I think there's some bumps. Givichi, I thought you were commenting on that, but I don't remember seeing anything in particular special. I mean, just things could go haywire with other values of C also. So. I don't think it's fundamental, but that's my feeling.
Okay. That's one thing we introduced each other with about. Starting from this week, we have two special members, two participants. One that is Tom, and he's a significant member from Atlas. So if you want to ask some real questions. And also we have Michael Barnett, he just disappeared. And he can be conveniently explained, called either a theorist or he's from this, whatever he wants to. So, is he a member of CMS?
He's a member of Atlas.
Atlas too. Oh, he got two Atlas. So it's only small size.
But he's not a significant member of Atlas.
So, we should try to take the advantage of them so when they're around. So Tom will be here for 1 week and Marco will be here for 2 weeks.
Johan, did you want to say something about tomorrow's?